Are you ready?
I'm never ready.
I said, are you ready?
Nah.
Then for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, let's get ready to podcast! It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Football. Meh.
But you watched two games now. Hello? Hello? Did I lose you already?
WWE Raw? Bah! Debates? We got them right here. A brand new podcast is about to be recorded. Now! There's just one problem.
Oh, what's that?
You never really told me what it was you wanted to talk about.
That's right. I'm going to be surprising you. Because I'm a bastard like that.
Cool.
But first, we had a comic book to review. Do you remember the comic book I sent you last week?
Yep.
That we completely forgot about till it was time, till we were done with the show? Yeah, I forgot while we were recording.
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, let me find it here.
Because I'm not that bright. We know that, though.
That's not true. Your mom calls you son.
I miss the crickets.
They can make a guest appearance occasionally.
No, they went home. I'm trying to pull up the comic myself, and it's not wanting to.
I don't know.
There we go. We had, a few months ago, the creator of a burlesque troupe that I have actually seen perform a couple of times called the Lalas. And we had her on because they were going to be starting up their very own funny book, their very own comical book. And they sent us the PDF so that we could look it over. Joe, did you look it over?
I did.
And?
It's got girls on the cover. You know, I gotta say,
I'm gonna have to. This is gonna be like pulling teeth to get this out of you.
I gotta say that the art was good. You know, the characters.
Yes, the art reminded me very much of good '90s, girly art.
Yeah, and the characters are drawn in such a way that you can pretty much recognize who's who. Although, as an introduction, it was hard to figure because you don't really get a feel for, oh, finally got four burlesque girls up there. You know, no real jive for their personalities yet. But there was one thing. I found the story very lacking. You know, ooh, a bad guy said something bad on the news, so one of us is going to go fly off hot-headed and get our ass handed to us on live television, and everybody is going to discover that, ooh, everybody's against the Lalas. You know, if there's one cliche in comic books I absolutely hate, is that one person can, you know, say something bad, and suddenly the entire universe is against you. I didn't buy it in Spider-Man way back in issue one when J. Jonah Jameson won one editorial, and everybody was against Spider-Man. I didn't buy it. I'll give you a real world example. Okay, when I had my comic shop, I had these vials of powdered candy, and they looked like test tube vials, and they didn't sell worth crap. And then of course one of the news guys got a hold of it and ran around Como Zoo and said, "Oh, don't these look like drugs? Doesn't this look like cocaine?" Did people pick it and say, oh, these are bad? No, the kids came in and I sold out.
Because it was on the news as being,
you know,
bad for
they
you.
Hit someone on live TV, and now the person you hit, they're the bad people. I just found the story really lacking. It's almost like the worst cliche in every comic ever made is in this comic. Although I got to admit, the centerfold is nice. And I got to say, you know, if as a promotion comic to just give away or sell at your venue and just kind of let people know who you are, yeah, it's fine. But if they're really serious about making this a comic series that people are going to follow, they really need to get a story editor or somebody who actually knows how to write comic books. Because, you know, I found this story pretty lacking. But, you know, at the end it was pretty because you got a nice biop of all the girls.
My review is kind of similar. I noticed that Fabian Nyasasia was the person who did the story, and in a lot of ways it's easy to tell that Fabian worked on the X-Men because he did use that X-Men thing of our heroes are hunted and hated by the world they're sworn to protect, whatever, except they aren't really sworn to protect. I think that this is a good introduction to modern burlesque for people who don't know much about it, because when I started being a fan of burlesque, most people were like, "Oh, that's stripping." No, it's different.
Yeah, it's not stripping.
It's not stripping. It has some of the. They both have a very similar history, and burlesque was, especially back in the 40s, 50s, even into the 60s, a comedian would come out and tell jokes, and then a girl would come out and do a dance where she strips down to almost nothing, and then the comedian comes out. But it's been around for a long time. A lot of comedians and comedy groups that we have heard of in the past, like Lenny Bruce started, you know, in burlesque clubs. There's a movie out there for two of them, with Betty Page doing burlesque, Varieties, and I forget the name of the other one, but they're both basically like somebody just set up a camera and filmed a burlesque show from the 50s. Now it's more about dance, it's more about performance, it's more about character.
Which is
and
hard
I
to
think,
do in a static comic.
Yes. But I think the artist pulled it off very well. The characters have a sense of motion, they have a sense of flow, I think the story is told fairly well. I think it leans way too heavily on cliche. And it almost like it wanted to straddle that world of, you know, being about burlesque, but also being kind of a faux superhero title. And with all of the stuff that Image is doing and all of the more autobiographical stuff, I think a more interesting book would have been if it would have been about the girls putting together their act, where they came from, what they're doing, rather than the, you know, we're fighting against the prudes. Because, again, it's very much a cliche, fighting against the prudes. If you go to any 80s slob comedy from Animal House on, it's our hero against the prudes. And I think it's a different world now, and while it's a good way to introduce the characters, in future issues, if they do future issues, I hope they do more reality-based stuff, really, quite honestly.
And me, I want to buy a photo cover where they autographed it, too. I'm a sucker for those.
Yeah. And I'll say this, they've got a great art team. The art team is fantastic. The story stumbled for me as well, and I don't know if it's because of the PDF, but it seemed like some things were a little out of order, so there were areas where it was a little hard to follow what was happening. But all in all, you know, again, if this is a promotional book, I think it's a great promotional book. If they have these at the shows that the Lalas do, pick it up, get it signed. It's a lot of fun. And I went and saw the Lalas when they were in town about a year ago. And it's a fantastic show. Just a fantastic show. They are a touring group. If they tour through Minneapolis again, I will go see them again immediately. And if they come to your area, just go to their webpage, go to the, if they're coming to your area, it's a fun show. And I was surprised at the number of, it was a really diverse crowd there. You had younger couples, you had older couples, you had groups of women, groups of guys, but it was just a fun show, a really fun show. And the comic itself, Joe, buy, borrow, or ignore.
I would buy it if I could get them to autograph it for me in person. I would probably ignore it otherwise.
See, for me, it's a borrow, unless I were to buy it as a souvenir at one of their shows,
yeah,
then it would be a
buy. I think that would be, for me, probably, you know, like I said, I'm a sucker. Photo variants, especially pretty girls, and autographs. That would be something cool because, and actually, if I may go off that topic momentarily, speaking of souvenirs, yeah, it's no doubt, you know, I'm trying to get rid of my vast accumulation of crud. But as
now it's crud.
Well, it was just because it got a little dirty.
It used to be crap.
It's all crap, but it's in cruddy boxes. But as I was digging through it, and I'll talk more about that when we get to the eBay stuff, I ran across a memento, which, like with the comic we were just talking about, I would probably never get rid of this because it brings up memories. It happens to be a comic that, well, what the hell, let's toss in an Ask the Strode. Corey?
Wow, already? I'm not ready!
Tell me about Fantasy Masterpieces.
Ooh, there were two series of Fantasy Masterpieces at Marvel, and maybe a third. The first was in the 60s, and it was a reprint series where they reprinted Golden Age comics. It then morphed into the comic Marvel Super Heroes, which was the place that Captain Marvel first appeared, where the Guardians of the Galaxy first appeared. And from there, it then became, it stayed the same name, Marvel Super Heroes, but it became a reprint book for the Hulk and Submariner. Then in the late 70s, it became a comic to reprint the Silver Surfer, and it was double-sized, but when the double-sized reprints went away, in the back of it, they reprinted the Jim Starlin Warlock series, which actually had only been printed 4 years before, until it completed the run of Warlock. Was there a third series?
I will go to our favorite non-sponsor site, Atomic Avenue.
I don't think there was.
And I will type in Fantasy. Let's see, volume one, volume two. Yep, they said just two. So this one is number one. And when you, I love the cover because it says, see the old-time fantasy thrillers of your favorite Marvel artist dramatically recreated just for you.
Ah, it's the first issue?
Yep. By Jolly Jack Kirby, by Sturdy Steve Ditko, by Jovial Joey Sinnott, by Darling Dick Aries, and by Dashing Don Heck. And as I open up the first page, there's
a pic of Stan Lee.
A mustache-less Stan Lee, as he talks about the different stuff. And, of course, I had Jolly Joe or Jolly Stan sign this to me. To Joe, a great guy, by Stan Lee, 1991. So no matter what.
Wow, Stan thinks you're a great guy.
I got it perfect by Stan Lee. Now, this was actually done for me at the only two-day Greenberg Comic Con that he dared pull off in Minnesota. To bring you back to those heady days of the late 80s, early 90s, Greenberg, I believe he was out of New York, did a comic show every month in one of the hotels. The MCBAs did theirs at the Thunderbird Hotel, and right next door at Marriott.
The Thunderbird that no longer
exists. But you can go to the website and see some of the pictures that were taken. And then I think there was a Marriott next door, and I was just reading the headlines. I guess Marriott just, like, bought everybody up, so it's like one big hotel chain now. But they would just do a room. Oftentimes it was a dealer show. Sometimes there were guests. I remember Reed Waller was there from Omaha. Jay Lee was there. And we actually hung out with him for a bit. Butch actually kind of hung out with him because it was a kind of, you know, Jay Lee just showed up and there was nobody there to tell him when the con started or when where he should go. And he just kind of wandered down and found the room. You know, it was just one of those.
He just kind of wandered around.
There was really nothing there. And Butch just kind of hung with him. I got a really cool sketch in my sketchbook, which I'll share online one of these days. Anyways, Greenberg tried a big two-day one. And we're talking, this was a major league con. And it was at the Minneapolis Convention Center where somebody else did a couple of cons and failed. But this one was weird because it was like half the room was empty. I mean, there were the normal local guys and a few guys like Harley Yee does a lot of Golden Age, Silver Age. Jim Lee was there. Joe Linsner and Joe Monks. Stan Lee was headlining one day. And really the dealer, I mean, I think Pat and I did okay for what we paid, but there was just nobody there. I mean, people came to see Jim Lee and I always tease Butch because Jim Lee was not doing sketches. I mean, he would sign things and he had art for sale. But Butch just kind of hung around the way he's apt to hang around, not really making a pest of himself, just digging things and, you know, talking comics. And Jim took his sketchbook or took Butch's sketchbook and just kind of drew a quick Wolverine sketch, a real quick marker sketch. And my theory is that Jim doesn't like doing that. I mean, he likes his big grandiose type work. Because I had a Batman Hush that he had a remarked, and it was the same thing, just a quick pencil sketch, you know, and then he markered over it, or maybe he just markered it. I don't remember. And I suppose when you got to do like 200 of these things, it's a pain in the butt, but he just didn't do much. And anyways, I watched the table. Pat went in and stood in line for Stan Lee. And got some autographs. And then I went through and stood in line and got more autographs. And sure, you know, he had his handler there. And he was, you know, guy was looking at the watch because Stan had to leave right at 5 o'clock. Because I think he just flies in, does his thing, and goes. There were, as far as I remember, there were no panels. When I get up to geeking, I got some fun news. And I will get... Well, we'll get to that. That's called foreshadowing, folks, because we don't want you to turn off this here podcast and go do something like read a comic book or go dig out your copy of Fantasy Masterpieces number one. So anyways, I just as I was digging through my stuff, I ran across this. And, you know, I've got a lot of comics like that that actually they bring a memory back. You know, I've got one signed by C.C. Beck, a Shazam number one, which I've related this story before. You know, these are just comics I just want to keep because they just they bring me back memories. As opposed to some of the other things that are just like, ooh, why did I buy this? That's neither here nor there.
Well, I our topic today will be bringing back memories.
Memories like dishonor of my, I don't know the words.
Last week, Joe, you talked about
of the way we were. I love karaoke.
You mean you're not going to sing Memories from the musical Cats?
Never. I'm allergic to cats.
Because I could sing it.
Go for it. We have never heard you sing.
No.
Oh. Damn, folks, I thought we had a first for you. Oh, well.
Memories all alone in the moonlight.
Don't
I have wanted to
everybody
spring
says
this,
no, Joe, to me.
I have wanted to spring this topic on you for a while, and now I have a reason. Now I have a purpose. Last week, you talked about Dan Slott, didn't you?
Yes.
And what did Dan Slott tell people to do?
Buy Clone Conspiracy, because it's going to be a major part of the upcoming Spider storyline. And although people are vented out and they did a rotten job of promoting it, he's trying to drum up support by telling people, yes, it's a very important part of the story.
Joe, do you remember back in Spider-Man when his parents showed up?
Yes.
And it was supposed to be a big deal that his parents showed up.
Yes.
Was it a big deal?
At the time it was, but as the story went on, I think, weren't they clones or something?
No, they were robots.
Oh, well. Life decoy models. But it did, LMG. It did get me...
Life model decoys.
It did get me to go dig up the Amazing Spider-Man Annual, and I don't know which one that actually dealt with the whole story behind his
number five
and Red Skull and all that stuff. Yeah.
Now there was I was actually thinking about that a few weeks ago, and I wondered, okay, so his parents were spies, right?
Yeah.
And they died in the line of duty fighting the Red Skull, right?
Yeah.
How come Peter didn't get like a stipend or anything, and Aunt May was always broke? Because if your parents are killed when they're spies, they pretty much would give you, you know, money to hit. Yeah, Stan didn't think that one through. But because that story was supposed to be a big deal and it really wasn't, Marvel upped the ante. And then, Joe, what was the next big story in The Amazing Spider-Man?
You know how you make Ante freeze? You take away her nightie.
Nope, that's not what the next big story was.
It was a Troubled, where we find out that the Parkers and the Mays were teenagers who got pregnant?
No.
You
have blanked it out of your mind, haven't you?
I probably have.
The return of Ben Reilly!
Where was he? I didn't even know where he went.
He went away in Amazing Spider-Man number 150, because we had Spider-Man fight his clone and beat the crap out of him and thought he was dead, so he dumped him down a smokestack.
I thought that was, okay, I'm thinking.
That was 149, where he dumped him down the smokestack. Then at 150, he got the paperwork, whether he was the clone or the other one was the clone. And at the end of the story, he didn't read it, because he knew that if he were the clone, he would have been thinking of Gwen Stacy. But no, he was thinking of Mary Jane Watson. But no.
I would have thought the fact he had a belly button would be the giveaway.
The clone did not die when it was dumped down the smokestack, which was a functioning smokestack in Spider-Man 150. But when they did the story, it was not a functioning smokestack, because he got down to the bottom and it was just a warehouse. Joe, we're going to talk about the Clone Saga. And we're going to talk about it not from the story standpoint. We're going to talk about it from the retailer standpoint.
Did
you first start hearing about the Clone Saga?
Did you know, I bet Chief O'Brien, when he's sitting in the transporter room, is thinking to himself, I could transport all of you into space right now if I wanted. I'm sorry, what are we talking about? I'm having a tough time.
We're talking about the Clone Saga.
I'm having a tough time. Don't make me bring those repressed memories up.
Joe, as a retailer... Because I remember there were hints of it in the Comic Buyer's Guide that, oh, this mysterious stranger is going to be big. This mysterious stranger is going to be big. As a retailer, did they give you any advance warning? Was there any sort of sales thing? Or did you learn about it the same time fans did?
Refresh my memory. When did the Clone Saga start?
93, 94.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, who cares? Jeez, we're flying high on the death of Superman, Batman... X-Men was still king of the heap, even though nobody knew who it was. Yeah, they want to throw a little Clone Saga at me. I do remember thinking, this could, and the key word could, be a brilliant idea. Because Marvel always did a thing where they tried to keep their characters in current time, and they would come up with different ideas. Oh, Nick Fury has the...
Infinity
formula. Reed Richards and them used to fight in the World War II. Now it's the Korean War. Doctor Strange defeated death, so he'll live forever. You know, eventually they just stopped. But to me, it was like the Clone Saga would be an interesting way. You could bring in a young Spider-Man, and you never would have had the that Brand New Day crap happen, because... You know, Happy Peter and Happy Mary Jane would have gone off and had happy babies. And you could have had, like, a brand new Spider-Man just discovering everything. And there were bits of brilliance. You know, I don't want to get too far ahead, but I did like when he, you know, Riley first runs into Venom, and he could not believe that Parker would actually have a deal with such a creature. Because I think Venom and Spider-Man had a, what would you call it, a detente in place where they didn't quite mess with each other.
They had an agreement, and it was when they were trying to, Venom had become so popular, they basically were going to have Venom be an anti-hero type Punisher character. And rather than having a Venom series, he just had a series of mini-series.
Yep. So there are points like that that I thought would be kind of fun. So I do remember saying it would be good, could be good. I also remember you saying, oh, this is going to be a train wreck.
I was worried that they were going to do what they planned to do. They were going to replace Peter Parker. I didn't think they would go as far as they did. I thought they would just kind of replace Peter Parker, but it would still be Peter Parker. He would still work at the Daily Bugle, blah, 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 blah. I had no idea that behind the scenes they were going, nope, we're going to get rid of the entire supporting cast. We're going to get rid of everything. It's a brand new start, blah, 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 blah. And the other thing about it was it came when everything had to have a huge event. Superman got killed. Batman got his bat broken. Green Lantern went crazy and killed all the other Green Lanterns. And on and on and on. And there was this feeling that, okay, Spider-Man needs to have a big event. And bringing his parents back just seemed to have fizzled. Because they built that up huge. That was supposed to be this big, huge story. And it's, yeah, they're robots.
They are robots.
They're robots. They're dead. Goodbye.
Yep. We fooled you. Ha ha. Funny how I thought they were clones.
No, it led into the clone saga. But the clone saga itself ran in all four Spider-Man books from October of 1994 to December of 1996. So my first question was, you know, did Marvel kind of give you the heads up that, hey, we're going to be doing this, it's going to be a big deal? You were still going to the retailer conferences at the time, too.
They probably did. I mean, because I had to have, I wish I had my order numbers, but I'm pretty sure we ordered heavy on it. I don't recall being shorted on that. I don't recall second prints either, but they probably had some type of deal in place where if I bought X number towards this number, I got an extra 5% off, or maybe they gave me an extra goodie or something, because there was no way they were going to do that without some type of incentive. That was real big back then for retailers. It was they didn't do returnability. That came later on in the 90s, but they would well, I talk a lot about the is it X-Men, Alpha, Omega, and then the Gold, the one that Scott Liddell did?
Yes.
If I ordered, I think it was 300 of those, I got a free Marvel neon sign. So I ordered 300 of those. And baby, if it wasn't for the fact that Scott Liddell paid a surprise visit to the store,
you would have eaten 200 of them.
They would have sold eventually. I mean, remember, I found a box of the cover of, or what do they call it, the wrap or the fold-out cover of X-Men 1, the Jim Lee one. And they were so common, but we just put them out at cover price, and people would come by, how much are these? Cover price. Oh! Matter of fact, Dan and Brian started doing that at the big store. They would find something, and they got a whole lot of it. Like, they had this one where it was Wonder Woman, and I believe it was a 25-cent book fighting another Wonder Woman. And they just put it out at like a retro price for 25 cents. Initially, they limited one, but, you know, it was probably a $10 book. But they just have found a collection with a ton of them, and they would do that occasionally. And I tried to do that back at our shop, but most of the books I was piled up on were stuff that everybody was piled up on. So, yeah, if it wasn't for that, I do not recall what the Spider-Man one was. I do, my brain.
Oh, I do. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Spider-Man Maximum Clonage Alpha and Omega.
But what was the, I don't recall the, if there was a retailer inside of it. It's probably a bigger percentage off. You know, like if you order this many, we'll give you an extra 5% off, which, you know, made a difference. And again, in the big shop in the heyday of 93, we talked about this in podcasts past. X-Men 300. Minimum, the low-end image book would have been 100. Maybe Tales of 1963 or Trencher 50. But we just ordered. We didn't even think about it. We just ordered. Spawn 1. 300. You know, whatever the issue number was. So, yeah, a Spider-Clone Saga, it easily would have been 100, maybe 200 books if they were offering any type of incentive. I don't believe they were offering, what would you call it? Like an actual incentive book. You know, like you get
no.
a gold one.
No, they didn't do that back then, but I'm looking at these issues, and boy, there were a lot of special covers for these. You also had, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 400, which was the death of Aunt May. You've got Spider-Man The Lost Years, which was the miniseries about what Ben Reilly did for all that time. Those all had special covers. Spider-Man The Final Adventure had special covers. It started during the era of the big special cover. By the end, they were no longer doing the special covers anymore. But, and, you know, every time I think about this story, the fact that it lasted a year and a half. A year and a half! And that the creators who were in on it at the beginning and had planned it, none of them were working on it at the end. They had all left.
Birth of a Spider-Man through Web of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, and Adjectiveless Spider-Man.
And Spectacular Spider-Man. Then there was Spider-Man Unlimited, the quarterly book. So, it was all over the place. It was all over the place. Now, as it started, did sales go crazy? Because I remember, I've read a lot about it, and I remember Spider-Man was selling really, really well during this. But then you hear about everybody who hated it so much, and everybody, oh, that's what I quit reading Spider-Man. So what was the sales trajectory on this thing? Because I will confess, I read the whole fucking thing. I bought them all.
You know, I'm trying to find it, but all I'm getting are like, I'm going to have to Google. Let me Google something here, because I think if I can find the issues, it doesn't ring a bell with me, to tell you the truth. I think it just sold, you know, as exciting as it was, but I can't recall the Spider-Man numbers. Maximum Clonage Alpha. Oh, they were gold editions.
Oh, there that were.
Had acetate overlays. And if you have one, it only retails for about $300.
Ooh.
Whereas the original one is pretty much at $1. So my guess is I probably ordered enough to get that, whatever that would have been, because that would have been a no-brainer. Lord knows what I did with them. I mean, if...
sold it.
Now, Maximum Clonage Omega did not have one. That's the one I remember, the big wraparound cover. Oh, yeah, I know I sold it. So I'm just looking to see if there was any other... Nope, didn't look like it. So, yeah, if that was the case, then I know I would have ordered enough. Scarlet Spider, I remember ordering tons of those. I think where I started to get lost were with all the different one-shots and miniseries. I mean, Maximum Clonage Alpha, Omega, Lost Years, Final Adventures, Osborne Journals, Parker Years, Redemption, Jackal Files. I probably worked hard to let my subscribers know, hey, these are the books coming up. If you want them, order them, because I certainly wouldn't have pulled all that crap into their subscription. What were the books? Yeah, the Web of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, and the Quarterly Spider-Man Unlimited. And Scarlet Spiders. Oh, sweet bitch. Yeah, it was, this was like an Age of Apocalypse type event where everything was... But I got to tell you, by the time I got to the end of it, I don't think many people cared.
Yeah, that was the thing. It went on so long. And this was back, you know, the World Wide Web was kind of new to a lot of people, but I was still on Genie. And on Genie, I would say within 4 months, people were, this is terrible! And if you go to the website, Life of Riley, which is one of the assistant editors who worked on the book, so he knows all the stuff that was happening behind the scenes. It was like, yeah, this guy created this character, and then he left, and nobody knew what the character's secret was or what was supposed to be happening. You know, the whole Judas Traveler thing or the Kane thing. Or yeah, and to me, it just felt like they kept throwing stuff in and throwing stuff in and throwing stuff in.
But you remember what they really threw in? It was all the climax of the whole story revealed that Peter, Ben, the Jackal, and many others had been manipulated for years by...
the Green Goblin.
Yeah, Norman Osborn, who returned from the dead and had been secretly masterminding the entire saga. It wasn't bad enough that he nailed Gwen Stacy. Am I mixing it up? No, that was later.
Yeah, that was later they added that.
But I do remember, and I'm trying to find the title that happened in, because that particular one was actually a fairly decent read, because I think it was John Romita Jr. did the art.
Yes, it was on Spider-Man number 75 was where it all wrapped
that's
up.
It, yeah, and that was a pretty good story, because it, but it, again, I think they just wrapped it up, and the big reveal was that in front of the entire Bugle staff, they reveal that Norm is the Green Goblin, but when Norm shows up again, they kind of forgot about it. So even then, it was like, ah, guys, we had Norm outed in Spider-Man 75. Well, we'll deal with that. It was a fluke, a hoax. And I think they did a storyline where Norm had a polite talk with, what's that guy's name? Ben Urich?
Yeah.
And explained to him how I wasn't the Green Goblin and I won't sue you. And they actually had a pretty good storyline where they explained the different goblins that popped up, including the reference of the kid who found the Green Goblin costume. And was it a 12-issue series? He ran around as a superhero, and then at the end, the suit got wrecked, and he just disappeared.
Well, he's still kind of around.
Yeah, he's around, but they referred to that in the story, like, well, this other goblin popped up, but he doesn't seem to have anything to do with Norm, and he's disappeared, so.
Well, and that was Ben Urich's kid.
All I remember is when he flew, there was a laughter, and he couldn't talk to anybody because the laughter was driving everybody crazy. So it's all Green Goblin's fault.
Yes.
And he's still around, you know.
Although we haven't seen him in a long time, thank goodness.
I think they're just trying to forget him.
No, because they used him for Dark Reign.
That's what I meant. They kind of made him number one bad guy after being the hero for so long.
And so after they use a character that much, they tend to put them aside for a while.
Especially because he had such a big deal at the end of Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. We all talk about the Spider-Clone sagas. Oh, it was a mess. Oh, it was terrible. Oh, nobody liked it. They have reprinted it in trade paperbacks. They did a 5-book thing of the complete clone saga, and then a 6-book thing of the complete Ben Reilly epic. Now they are reprinting it in omnibuses.
Ugh. If it was an omnibus, I would probably buy it.
Oh, there's no way it could all fit in an omnibus.
Fine. I just wanted something to block my truck so when I get my new tires, I can...
Now, sales-wise, do you remember how Spider-Man did at the end? Because there was a lot of talk of, oh, crap, now we have to save the Spider-Man books, to the point where they brought in, they canceled all of them and started them up again with John Byrne and Howard Mackey. Were sales really that bad, or was it just word of mouth?
What year did it end?
96.
I don't recall. You know, I think
actually,
what
it ended around the end of 96.
I think the people,
yeah, December of 96.
I think the people who were buying the main Spider-Man titles were buying them. I think they were ignoring the miniseries. I don't think the reboot necessarily made a big deal. You know, for some people it was, you know, how to drop off. You know, this is the dropping point. And then for some people it was like a jumping on point. And then, of course, the biggest seller of the whole thing was Spider-Man 101 Ways to End the Clone Saga.
Which was actually really fun.
I think I just gave that away. I don't remember. No, I don't. You know, it doesn't recall, because I think just pretty much everything was starting to just retrench slowly. You know, I always talk about, well, X-Men sold incredibly well, but I never read any of them. I got to say, probably by the end of the Clone Saga, with the exception of Spider-Man 75, I was probably ignoring it too.
Myself as a reader, again, I read it all. And when they did the Ben Reilly thing, they brought in Dan Jurgens. And it was his first time ever working at Marvel. Think about that. The first time Dan Jurgens ever worked at Marvel. They brought him in. They put him on a Spider-Man book. And it's not the Spider-Man he wanted to draw. They actually created the book for him. It was, they canceled Web of Spider-Man and then had Sensational Spider-Man with a zero issue and everything. And they gave it to Dan Jurgens, and he was off the book pretty quickly because it wasn't the Spider-Man he wanted to do. And he moved over to Thor, which I still have not read his Thor. Is it any good?
I believe it's in my dollar bins.
Okay. Well, that doesn't matter if it's good or not, because ROM's in your dollar bins.
No, ROM actually I'm keeping.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're talking about you sorting your comics.
No, I'm just talking about pricing.
Ah. But I remember it ended, and then it just, the Spider-Man books kind of limped along for another 6 months, and then they did a reboot with all new number ones. And you'll have to look online, but I don't remember those number ones being huge. Like, oh my God, it's a new Spider-Man number
one. It's almost impossible to sort Spider-Man number ones now because of all the,
all the times they've done it.
Oh, and well, the miniseries and
this would be Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Volume 2.
All right, let's find it here. Amazing Spider-Man. I can't. Oh, there it is. Volume 2. According to our friendly folks at AtomicAvenue.com. There is the regular cover is about $4. There is a Dynamic Forces. Oh, that's a signed one by John Romita Jr. Never mind. Oh, this is when they did the Marvel Authentics, too.
Yeah.
At Marvel Authentics, what they did is they would have a cover, and then there was always a box that would either be ready for an autograph or a head sketch or whatever. So if you ever really want to have some fun on eBay, just go look for Marvel Authentics, which I'll do momentarily. Let's see, variation C, D. You know, there are so many different variants, and they range from the Sunburst variant, which is 20, but the regular book is about $4. And then you get into some signed and authentics and Sun, you know, Dynamic Forces alternative, which are up there. But yeah, as a collector item, it's there. And then as you move into the issue 2, issue 3, they're like dollar books.
Yeah. The Byrne reboot just – I don't know if it was Byrne had already lost fan support or it just wasn't a good reboot or anything. But I remember that just not hitting people. There was some excitement. Oh, wow, John Byrne's coming in. And within a few months, it was nobody cared, which was really weird for a John Byrne book, even then.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he left and JMS came on and the book became big again. But really, in a lot of ways, the Spider-Man Clone Saga hurt the Spider-Man series for years. It was years before they really kind of picked up and Spider-Man became kind of a hot comic again. Whereas with Batman, you know, they had their big story and then they kept having big stories. I don't think there's been a time since Dark Knight that Batman's ever kind of fallen off the radar where it doesn't sell. Superman kind of went up and then slowly came down and it's now just where it is. No one seems excited about Superman.
I'm looking here on eBay, the Marvel Authentics. Quite a few of them. Some of them are kind of fun where they had, like Romita signed put a little head sketch in there. But a book, just the plain book, runs about $25. And then after that, if you're lucky enough to score a sketch or an autograph, or if you went and had it, you know, graded or whatever, it goes up. There's a Spider-Woman one, there's a Gambit one, there's a, well, it says there's a Daredevil one. This was kind of a precursor to sketch covers. Because remember, the cover was pretty full. It was just had a big box that was available for someone to put an autograph or put a sketch or something on there. And I seem to recall you could buy them with sketches, but I don't see many.
That was mostly through Dynamic Forces, though, wasn't it?
Oh, big time, yeah. I don't remember if I ordered them through Dynamic Forces or as part of Marvel. Here's a Magneto Rex, if you remember that miniseries.
Vaguely.
For about $12. So basically, the whole Marvel Authentics was just the beginning of the idea of a blank cover for art. So you can go check them out, see what kind of fun ones there are. It's about 112 of them on eBay right now. There are 12 reasons why the Clone Saga wasn't that bad. Okay, I lied.
Well, really?
There's 10 reasons. And this is off of comicbook.com, so don't blame me. Number one, number 10, Ben Reilly proves himself, which he kind of did by the end of it.
Yeah, I thought that they did a good job of establishing Ben Reilly as a character who was kind of a throwback Spider-Man. You know, you talked about the thing with Venom. For me, it was also, he still had that sense of responsibility, but it wasn't, Spider-Man by this point had gone through so much that they were even going back to the, you know, I won't show any emotion. I am just the spider. And it's like, oh, God.
Number nine.
Just stop.
Peter and Mary Jane had a baby.
Oh, yes, they did.
All know Superboy punched a wall, and that doesn't count anymore.
And the thing that always annoyed me, they set it up so that Norman Osborn stole the baby.
That bastard.
And they touch on it in Spider-Girl, believe
yeah,
it or not,
yep.
Because it was Tom DeFalco saying, all right, well, I'm just going to tell stories in the future, and this is the baby that they had, and we were going to do a story where Norman Osborn had the kid, and Peter Parker and Mary Jane had to come get him, but, you know, they would never let us do it. And now it's like the baby had never existed.
It's like the devil got in there somewhere. I don't know. It's... You know, and what I found weird is that they decided to go to the West Coast so Peter and Mary Jane could live a normal life. Really? I mean, you're going to really just move everywhere? I'd be like, you know what? It's all yours. I'm not being Spider-Man nowhere. Number eight, a well-told Spider-Man quits story.
No.
Okay. The sensational reboot.
No.
Yeah, that was the Dan Jurgens thing. Good. Yeah, we didn't know that. Okay, Spider-Ben's costumes.
Oh.
and was serviceable.
The torn hoodie.
Well, I tell you, you know, the dumbest hoodie. Thing I ever see is a guy running around in spandex fighting. I want to be like Cable or Batman, or I want pockets to pull crap out to blow people away. The Spider-Man Doc Octopus dynamic.
I don't remember that being any different. Because I know they killed off Dr. Octopus and replaced him with a female version. And thank God that got erased.
Yeah. Norm Osborn returns, which we talked about, which was
pretty cool. I hated that so much.
I thought it was pretty sweet.
Hated it.
But then again, I also didn't read most of it up until issue 75 anyway, so.
I still don't like that Norman Osborn came back. The story where Gwen dies and then he dies was perfect. Leave it alone.
Because now the problem is, too, is, I mean, really, and we talk about this in pro wrestling, these two should be such arch foes. The minute Norm shows up, Spider-Man should be on him.
I want to kill him immediately.
And there was, you know, even in Avengers, there were like, you could see Parker was like, you don't get it. I mean, he should have been unconsolable. It would have taken Cap and Thor to hold him back.
Yep.
Okay, the number three, Kane's character development. I thought Kane was an overrated character anyways.
It was just angry Peter Parker.
Now, they're saying the underrated Lost Years is number two.
It was an okay
miniseries. They said the best Spider-Man story most fans have never read.
I could see that. I thought it was an okay story. But, again, you know, it's all right. We're going to fill in 10 to 15 years of history with three issues. Okay.
And of course,
I didn't mind it, but I'm not.
We haven't even talked about Amazing Spider-Man number 400, the death of Aunt May. That was later reconned in a ludicrous fashion. May was alive, in fact. Norman had actually hired an actress who got plastic surgery to pretend. And the fact that it had a creepy, stupid tombstone on the cover. But the story, had it been left, was actually pretty good.
I thought that was one of the best Spider-Man stories ever written. And it also had one of my favorite storyline bits in it. When Aunt May said, "I've known all along,
yes.
There's no way I couldn't have."
Yeah. And I will go back to Spider-Man 200, because in that storyline leading up to Spider-Man 200, when it was thought that Aunt May had passed away, holy cow, was that a kick in the young reader's gut for me, because that was major. I mean, granted, she came back, and in a more believable fashion. And I'll fast forward even why can't I think of his name? What's his name? JM's run. Straczynski, when he was running. He did a good storyline where Peter finally does reveal himself to Aunt May. And the story that goes where she, the way she reacts. First of all, she cancels her subscription to the paper, which freaks out J. Jonah Jameson. Because he's like, "But you're one of our longest subscribers." And then she's in the park reading a book, The Psychology of Superheroes. You know? She's not freaking out. She's not having a heart attack. She's trying to figure out how to deal with it. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, for just a standalone story, which I want to read, Spider-Man 400 is one of the definite top 10 greatest Spidey stories ever. Just ignore the ridiculous die-cut tombstone cover.
Well, you could have bought it without that, but most people didn't. Because if you remember, I was that one person who, I just want the regular cover.
Hang on a second. I want to check something here. That was the first. Wait, was that the? How far did Volume 2 go? Well, Volume 2 went to 14. No.
Volume 1 went to 423 issues, I think.
Volume 2 stopped at issue 58 and then reverted to issue
the regular
500.
Numbering, yes. Yes.
Okay, hang on. I got to go back. I want to see how much those Amazing Spider-Man 400s are worth. See all the research we don't do before the show just to...
Well, it's because I sprung it on you, because if I said we're going to talk Spider-Clone, you would have come into
I would have checked out.
Yeah.
And
also, you would have thought of it storyline, And I don't want to get into the storyline as much as I want to get into what it was like as a fan dealing with that, what it was like as a retailer.
All right, here we go. Issue 400 for, you're kidding me, $40?
Wow.
That does not surprise me.
I will look on eBay during the break to see if that's true. And then there's a variation A that's called the white cover edition. It has no ads.
Yep.
$180. And then another variation B, which is a enhanced second cover that's only going for $10. So you can find it inexpensive. So I will go look on the Googles or the eBays to see how much Spider-Man 400 is really worth.
You know who doesn't have a bunch of clones running around?
Well, I won't be too sure about that. The debates are still going on even as we're potting.
No, no, no. Oh. These guys, our sponsors.
Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising.
And after we get done with our sponsors, we always ask Joe what's going on the eBays.
Okay, well, $5. You can find Amazing Spider-Man 400 for $5. That's the regular ones. I'm going to go to the high end here, and let's see a couple autographed ones, a couple rare ones, a couple Spanish ones. So, yeah, I mean, you can find it if you want. So the white cover one is running about $90. So that's the thing. A lot of things, and this will segue into the eBay stuff, something I've always talked about over and over. It's not enough that the guide says that it's worth $180. Go on eBay, because you know as certain as God made little green apples, somebody will have it for less. Unless it's truly, truly a super rare book. For example, like we talked about, the Amazing Spider-Man 400, the white one, $89.95. Now, if you were looking for copies of Hothead, Paisan, Homicidal, Lesbian, Terrorist, you're out of luck. Well, actually, you're not, because I have issue 20 and I just put it up. I did something I rarely do. I was last night, Corey was watching the pay-per-view. I was busy doing my eBays. And I was, you know, I dug through and I got about a long box worth of stuff that I think might be worth something. And I'm looking online to see what it's worth. And I ran across a couple that gobsmacked me. And Corey, I emailed you. Do you remember what they were?
No, I was very in. I thought the pay-per-view last night was really good. Oh, yeah, it was Disney stuff.
Yeah, Uncle Scrooge, starting with issue 309 and going to, what about, 314? Now, this is when Gladstone... what was the date there? 1997, 1998? Gladstone went from just normal comic book into a prestige format. What was the comic book's price in 1997? About $2, $2.50?
No, when they went to the digest, when they went to the square bound, they were either $5.95
or $6.95. But a comic book was what?
Oh, they were $2 each.
So you're talking you went from $2 to $7. And what's happened?
And a lot of people dropped it.
And now they're very, very damn expensive. 309, which was the first one, I lowballed it at $50. 310, I lowballed at $100. These are on eBay even as we're speaking. There's a guy who has the whole run almost for about $500. A couple other big ones I ran across, again, that homicidal lesbian terrorist one. You thought I made this one up? No. it's actual. There are none. There's one on eBay, number 19. They're asking 20, so I put this one up at 20. Corey, do you remember the Eisner-nominated series Pure Imagines? It was a comic book-sized interview magazine.
Yes, yes, that was from a friend of the show, Greg Theakston.
Yep. Number one, or actually I got number five because it has Ren and Stimpy in there. It's listed like a $30 book.
Yeah.
But there's a guy who's got all five of them online for $15. So again, look around, check it out. Every so often I talk about a Heroes Initiative. They have various exclusive comics. I got the number one Hulk variant back when the Hulk showed up. Who or what is the Red Hulk? People asking like $100 online for these things. And sometimes it's just a rare book that nobody paid attention to. I Before E. Do you remember that one from Fangraphics, Corey?
Yes, it was a collection of Sam Keith short stories and art sketches and stuff like that.
Yep. One and two, they're both megabuck issues. Not everything goes for high buck, but, you know, could you imagine how gobsmacked I was? Here I am eating peanut butter sandwich. I got my soda to the side. I've got the Uncle Scrooge I'm thumbing through, making sure to wipe my hands off. Type in, holy greases, it's $100, and I just, okay. So I'm telling you, before you dump something, double check it on eBay. You know, it doesn't matter what the price goes. I think earlier in the year I was talking, I had on commission the second print of Action Number One, which was a Safeguard soap giveaway. And I remember having them at a con. I priced a couple out at $100, and you know, a well-known dealer come by, ah, I sell this for $25. You'll never get that for it. Guess what? I did. So,
did you run over and buy all his copies at $25?
No, he didn't have any. So,
oh, okay.
So again, go figure. I mean, you never know what is going to be big in price. Corey, you know the story of Warlock when Jim Starlin started. Where did that storyline start?
It started in Strange Tales.
That first issue, 178, in mint shape, is $100-$200.
That doesn't surprise me.
And 180, the first appearance of Gamora, another $200 comic in mint shape. Mine were only very fine, so they sold for half that. But the point is they sold. And I just ran across where Strange Tales ended. Corey, maybe you, let's, this isn't an Ask the Strode, but let's find out if Corey knows the answer. Does Corey know? An offshoot of Ask the Strode. Why did they go from Strange Tales to Warlock?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know why. I know that Strange Tales became a Doctor Strange reprint book.
Uh-huh.
And Warlock, I just remember they started with issue 9, which weirded me out as a kid, not knowing that there had been an 8-issue Warlock series years before that was god-awful. It was like an adaptation of Jesus Christ Superstar as a superhero comic on Counter-Earth.
Without the snappy music.
Yes. But I don't know why they switched from one to the other.
Yeah, it's weird because the whole storyline goes, well, we'll revisit that because I'll talk about it when we get to geeking. In the meantime, like I said, check out some of the goofy collectibles I'm finding. I'm just having a ball digging through my collection. Not everything is going up, I mean, of course, and not everything is worth money. But again, if as a listener of this here show, if you do see something you're interested in, let me know and I'll do something special. Maybe I'll bring it right to your door. Of course, you got to live in the Twin Cities for that one. I definitely will throw in something out of my vast accumulation of crap. The crud-free stuff, not the crud. Maybe free shipping. I don't know. Well, you know, just send me a note when you buy it, either on your PayPal or through the eBay webs. You can contact me at my email, crazycomics@gmail.com, but generally doing it right through eBay works a little easier because then I'll actually see that you say, hey, I listened to the show. Toss in something fun. Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z.
And now that we're done with that, we get to my favorite part of the show. No, 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 not the end. Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
In 5 days, and this is a little sad news, everybody. In 5 days, I won't be able to rag on Corey anymore that he's not going to Fall Comic-Con, the one-day wonder, October 8th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Minnesota State Fair Education Building. All sorts of fun stuff will be going on. The Nick Post Scholarship Silent Auction. There'll be free grab bags for the first 100 attendees. Free parking. Lisa will be doing the door prizes. There's always a ton of fun stuff there. 33,000 square feet of awe-inspiring comic book action with over 100 comic book creators. And, of course, you can still get your advance tickets, www.mcbacomiccons.com. If you do the advance ticket route, be sure to print out your receipt. That is your ticket. You go to the door, show it, they cross-reference it on a list, you're in. You don't have to wait in that long, mega-long line. And Corey remembers, because that line went all the way down to the education building, all the way down to the Progress Building where we used to hold FallCon. And, of course, this one will be Corey-free. He won't be there promoting the show. He's embarrassed. He won't be there promoting his book, which, do you actually have a name for that trade that you and Dan are doing?
Yes, it's Worldwide News, the first volume.
And Corey won't be there to promote and autograph it, which is dumb. But this is the last time. Well, for Corey, I imagine this is a geeking, but for me, it's a freaking because I won't be able to ride him anymore. But folks, we have until May 20th to convince Corey to go to the Spring Con. And maybe if he's rested and relaxated, he might even do that live podcasting, which I thought was kind of cool. This week
don't hold your breath.
At work, well, I still think you should. I thought it was kind of a unique thing. And, you know, I'm sure you listened to me as you ran to the bathroom. Notice you didn't run to the bathroom this week, folks.
No, I just turned the headphones off.
I think it was something unique, and I thought it was something we could have actually offered various cons. And one of your friends online talked about a con that'll be over with by the time the podcast dropped, but something, said MotorCon or something? Not that far away. We could have gone. But alas, leading to my second freaking, this week, I don't know what it is. Like, everybody's off. So we're short, and I will be the only supervisor on duty, which I don't mind, but it's kind of annoying. But it's like, my fellow leads are off, my supervisors are off, the managers are off. It's just, I don't know. Hopefully it's stress-free. And the other thing that's interesting, because it is in baggage as opposed to up in the checkpoint, nobody's going to care. Unless the entire system comes crashing down on itself, nobody's going to care.
No one cares, huh?
No one's going to care.
Now you know how I feel every day. Thank you. Good afternoon. You've been a beautiful crowd. Don't forget to tip your wait staff. They're working hard for you.
And what I thought was interesting, of course, is all these guys online going, why are you giving up cons? Don't give up cons. Here I thought you'd be working to sell that book. You haven't even promoted it once on this here podcast. I thought you'd be pushing it. Do you even get a cut? Do you get a taste of the action on this, or is it pretty much in Dan's ballpark?
It's in Dan's ballpark, but also we're waiting until the book is actually done, and it will be in the ads.
Cool.
Because I don't want to be a self-promoting fool.
You said it.
I don't want to be like other people who've been on the show in the past who whine and kvetch that you are promoting their stuff and then cannot wait to promote their stuff.
But the question is you said, are there actually going to be copies at FallCon, or is he still taking orders?
He is still taking orders. I do not know if there will be copies at FallCon or not because the editing process took a little longer than I thought it would.
Cool. That's why people don't really talk about their stuff until it's out. But I didn't know if you were even getting that piece of the action because I know in the past with people you worked with, it was pretty much, I'll write it. You do the art. You keep the art. Sell it. Make some money off it. You're very generous with your terms.
Yes.
So.
And while Dan says that I will get a piece of the action, what I would probably do then is just pour it back into the strip so that Dan can make a little more money off of it, because writing it is not hard. I know that a lot of people, writing is just as hard to work. No, because once I have the characters in my head, I've written over 100 strips. I know these characters backward, forward, and upside down. All I have to do, if you're reading the strip now, head on over to worldwidenews.solitairerose.com. You'll see I'm doing a thing about a political convention. All I had to do is, political convention. Boom, 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 there's 7 strips in my head already. It's not hard. Dan has to sit and do hours of work drawing that stuff. For me, it's I write it in a notebook and then type it up. So I figure he should get the majority of the money, and I will just pay for the hosting costs. And the previous strip I worked on didn't take a penny from that. The artist made $50 to $60 selling the originals, all the ad money, all of the merchandise money, and I didn't get a penny from it because I figured I wasn't doing that much work. The other person was doing a lot more work. Now, for stuff in print that I write, that'll be a little different. But then I have a very odd way of looking at my creative stuff. It's like when people want – some people have said that we should set up a Patreon, or they want to send us money or have a tip jar. No, I don't want to do that. I want the podcast to be free. I don't want anyone to feel that they have to send us any money for it. If you want to support the podcast – send the links out, retweet us, links up on Facebook, tell people, patronize our advertisers, let the advertisers know that you listen to the show, that way that they will pay more for the ads and we'll make our money that way. Just like how kind of Howard Stern used to talk about his radio show. Howard Stern didn't have shirts and mugs and keychains and all that stuff. It's no. Go to the advertisers, say you heard about it on the show. The advertisers will pay more money. That's how I think it should be done.
We could have had mugs.
That's my philosophy.
Okay, that's my next freaking. We could have had mugs.
If you want to, Joe, if you want to create mugs and t-shirts and keychains, go right ahead.
Hey, I'm just glad I didn't drop. $200 I was planning to blow on the backdrop for a con that you'll no longer want to go to. So I'll put that in the geeking pile.
Yeah, I just saved you $200 by not going to conventions anymore. You should be thanking me.
You sold me $100 for the parking permit I had to get to go see WrestleMania.
I tried to give it to you, and you rejected it.
Yeah, I'm going
to
take $100 from a guy who doesn't even take a piece of the action of his own creativity.
You're arguing both sides of the fence.
Yeah, damn right I am.
On to my freaking.
I am very sorry you're not going to the con, and we've already talked about why.
And we're going to move on to my freaking.
Not till I release my freaking.
Oh, God.
Corey, what are you freaking about?
Thank you. I don't remember anymore.
Good.
Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, this year at Festivus, I'm going to have something to bitch about.
Oh, God.
So I'm happy about that. You really don't have a freaking?
No, I don't have a freaking this week.
Ah, good. Good for you. I've had weeks like that. Let's see. What else we do? Oh, I was talking about that whole thing about Warlock. I just finished reading 2 books. Drax, The Complete Saga, or Completed Story, whatever Marvel calls it, and Warlock, The Complete Saga. And there's one book, I believe, The Last Warlock. Is it Warlock number 9? To Atomic Avenue!
No, the last issue of Warlock was number 15. Although number 16 was drawn, it was the art was lost.
Oh,
it was left in a cab.
Yeah, because the next time we see him, he's in Avengers Annual 7,
nope.
Is it?
The next time we see him, it's in Marvel Team-Up number 53.
Yeah, but that wasn't in the complete Warlock, which I've...
No, it wasn't.
It's a
even though
minor,
it showed,
minor geeking or freaking.
Well, even though it showed how he got from being huge... to normal size it again.
Yeah, and it also dealt with one of the gems. I believe that was the one the gardener abandoned or whatever. And they even refer to it in Marvel 2-in-1. And if you happen to have the, I believe it was the 90s reprint of Warlock 1-6, they actually reprinted in there.
Yes, although, they did. It was
why
by...
it wasn't in the complete saga, which is weird because, you know, some of those, that Drax book was huge. So you follow the story of Drax, and what's interesting is it ties in a lot to Captain Marvel. So when I get my Captain Marvel complete works, it'll be like I've read half these issues because Drax in the first saga against Thanos with the Cosmic Cube played very heavily into it. And I got to say, when they, after the Jim Starlin run, and again, this is the Drax book, not the Marvel, they went back to deal with Captain Marvel and Drax. Oh, the Doug Mink stories were bad.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That was like we talked about, what was that, Deathlock from a couple podcasts ago. It's like the original stories were cool, and now we're just going to shoehorn everything in a couple and wrap up this and move on to the next, which as a fan growing up, I thought was really cool. But now that I'm reading how cool the Jim Starlin stuff was versus it's not as cool. But anyway, so after reading that, I went into the Warlock book. And again, there's only one issue that overlaps, but that covers the whole thing from Strange Tales all the way to the first death of, or is it the second? It gets kind of timely, probably in there, but it's freaking amazing. I mean, I don't know. I read this stuff as like, what was Starlin on when he was writing this stuff? It was awesome. And I was explaining this to my daughter because she's never read these either. And she just took my copies of Drax and Warlock to read. And of course, now I want to go into the Infinity Gauntlet, and I have no freaking clue if I even have a copy of that anymore. What were the three? Gauntlet, War, and...
There was the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity War, and the Infinity Crusade.
Crusade, that's the one I was trying to explain to my daughter without giving away too much why the Crusade was kind of like a poor man's Civil War, because after the Crusade was over, oh, okay, everything's fine. It was all brainwashing, which was really dumb. But it should have had ramifications, even like Civil War does. And who knows, may now. I mean, I just went out and picked up a copy of the Civil, was it Civil War 5 that came out? They were
yes.
Like, oh, don't reveal the ending. And I knew by the time I got my box, it would be too late. So I ran out and picked one up. And, I wasn't that shocked by it, but all I can think of is who's the guy who does the Law is an Ass?
Oh, that's Tony. No, not Tony Isabella. Robert Ingersoll.
Yeah, oh, God.
Who on Facebook just posts terrible puns. That's it. That's all he posts.
And when he posts his column, man, even I could see the problem with this particular book. At the very end of it. But, you know, again, it's going on, whatever. Superheroes live in their own weird law world. They can go ahead and do it. Speaking of other things I read, I'm actually pretty proud of myself because as I was digging through all my comics, I didn't stop and have a reading fit. What I mean by that is I didn't stop and start reading huge chunks of comic books instead of sorting through the comics like I'm supposed to be doing. That's why I think since day one of this here podcast, except for when I was on the road and unable to get to my stock, I've been just sorting and moving and doing eBaying and doing whatever to my stock. I mean, we had podcasts where I used to be, okay, I went through a box of S's. Let's look at all the different goofy comics we ran into. And, but I was proud of myself because I only pulled a few aside to read. The first ones, Corey, do you remember Ocean Comics Popeye adaptations?
Yes.
There were
Peter David wrote those,
yeah,
didn't he?
There were two. I think so. I'll take a look. There were two issues, and pretty much that's it. They were supposed to be an ongoing line, kind of modernizing Popeye. Published story, Bill Peterson. Nope. Story editor. Really, they didn't give any credit? Oh.
No credit
Ron
for you.
Fortier. He did.
Yes. Ron Fortier, who's on Facebook as well. He now writes pulp novels.
And let's see.
That he self-publishes.
Let's see if I can find who wrote. Yeah, he wrote the second one. So, yeah, this was just in 1988. In 87, they tried to revamp the Popeye line. And what's interesting in Ocean Comics, the only other thing that's big is they were doing, I believe, they had ads for, like, Southern Nights. They had Blackthorn Publishing, Sad Sack. They had Comic Interview. The ads were more entertaining than the Popeye. And the thing is this is a case where these aren't worth diddly and or squat. As a Popeye collector, you may get a kick out of them, and there's only two of them. But like I said, they're only worth about $1 a piece. So into the dollar bins they go. The other books I pulled out, I found one of many copies of Superman Anniversary Issue number 400. This book is fun. It's also in great shape, a little expensive. I mean, it's a who's who of comic books. Terry Austin, Brian Boland, Ray Bradbury writes some stuff. Byrne, Chaykin, Steve Ditko did a Superman page. Will Eisner did some stuff. Grell, Jack Kirby, as well as Mobius, Miller, Frank, that is. I mean, it's a who's who of just celebrating Superman. If you're a Superman fan, this is one of those rare issues that's worth seeking out and picking up. Because it's just, I mean, I was gobsmacked to flip the page and here's a Steve Ditko Spider-Man, or Superman. And just fun stuff. Probably one of the reasons why I kept it. And the other ones, I'm pretty sure Corey will probably remember. Do you remember, I don't know if this comes under a story. Oh, it's when Iron Man fought Dr. Doom and they accidentally ended up in Camelot.
Yes, they did two stories. The first one was Iron Man 150, and I don't remember where the second one is. But they also did a trade paperback of those two stories.
I know I have the trade paperbacks downstairs. The
Michelinie and Layton did that.
The first one is 149, 150, and 150, it's great because the cover price on 149 was 50 cents, and on 150, which is a special double-size 150th anniversary issue, it was 75 cents. There's also a very good what-if book that ties into this, which I don't want to give too much away because I part of me wants you guys to go out to, the eBay, Falcon, your local comic book store, and find these books and enjoy them as much as I had. The second ones occurred during the Acts of Vengeance, and again, it was 249 was the setup, 250 was the payoff to save Camelot. So I haven't read those two yet. I probably will after the podcast was done. The only other thing I read, again, Drax, Warlock, I mean, those are some pretty big books. I found deeply buried in my pile of crap the facts in the case of the departure of Miss Finch. Corey, are you aware of the facts in the case of the departure of Miss Finch?
No.
It is a Dark Horse graphic novel written by our friend Neil Gaiman, drawn by Michael Zulli, who I think lives in Minnesota. I wonder why we've never had him at a con. And Todd Klein is in there with the lettering, too. This is one of those, back then it was $13.95. It's a graphic novel published by Dark Horse every so often, just a fabulous story. It's just, you sit down, I love it because I have no idea what's going on. And by the end of it, it was just incredible. And the last one I think I read like this, I think I complained a bit about the price. It was the How to Pick Up Girls book that Neil Gaiman had done. And I forget the artist because my daughter has it upstairs reading it. So that's pretty much it for reading. The other thing is Solo Joe number 3 is going to be debuting sometime in November.
What?
I know. This is called foreshadowing, folks, because Pat and I are going to sit down, my old partner Pat, and we're just going to sit down and over pizza, recollect on comics.
Wait, you're going to have pizza and talk about comics?
Well,
that's a cool idea for a podcast. Somebody should try that.
Yeah, that is. I would have to check into that. Maybe I'll Google that and see if that's open. But we're going to be talking about a comic shop. Because even if you go back when Corey was still cool and had great ideas of setting up at cons, we actually interviewed Pat at one of those brief moments. And even in that short, I forget how long was it, 10 minutes, maybe less?
Yeah, about 10, 15 minutes.
Even he brought up things that I totally forgot about. So sitting down and being able to talk you know, unlimited. We'll see what kind of podcast I can pull out of this. If it's hopefully not too mega boring or mega long. So a lot of geeking going on. Corey, how about you? What's got you geeking on your side of the universe?
I want you to hear something, Joe. Can you hear that?
You're either ripping something or eating potato chips.
I am opening my new package.
Uh-oh.
From Tomorrow's Publishing.
Ooh, a package.
Tomorrow's had a sale.
And you didn't Google me? Oh, man.
I put it up on the Facebook.
See, that's where you talked a bit earlier about, you know, helping us by putting up our links and things like that. You got to remember, only 10% of your people see any one link. So anything you post on Facebook's not automatic. Your entire vast repertoire of fans will see.
So here in my hand, I now hold Dan Spiegel, A Life in Comic Art. This is a biography of Dan Spiegel, who drew for Dell Publishing for decades. And also, if you read more mainstream stuff, you may know him from Black Hawk, which he did with Mark Evanier. He also did Hollywood Superstars with Mark Evanier, which I believe I'm the only person who has all five issues. Crossfire. And he's done a lot of work in comics. He's an excellent, excellent draftsman. The problem is I'm looking through this and so much, I would say a good third of it is an index of what he's done. There looks to be a really good interview in here. Lots of examples of his art. It's not as thick as I would like, but still, pretty nice book. Here is the Star Reach Companion. Joe, here's an Ask the Joe. What was Star Reach?
Well, I know I have Star Reach Classic somewhere sitting nearby.
Star Reach was a anthology comic from the mid 70s till about 1980. Published by Mark Friedrich, which had work by Howard Chaykin, let's see, Dave Sim,
Jim Starlin,
Craig Russell, Jim Starlin, Walt Simonson,
Dick Giordano, P. Craig Russell.
It's where the Elric stuff started.
Ooh.
It's where P. Craig Russell's opera stories started.
Ditko.
Yep. Mike Vosburgh, Frank Brunner. It ran about 18 issues. Mike Friedrich also is a art. He basically is kind of the first comic book agent. It goes into the history of that. And then the last one is a second copy, because my first copy I have loaned out a bunch of times and it's all beat to hell, is a book called Streetwise. And what Streetwise is, it basically came from a single story that Jack Kirby did called Street Code, which he actually did for a magazine called Argosy, where he did a 10-page story about his childhood in the 80s, and it was only published in that magazine, and Tomorrow's got the rights to publish it, but it's only 10 pages, so they had a whole bunch of other artists do stories about their childhood. Here's some of the lineup. Will Eisner, Brent Anderson, Murphy Anderson, Sergio Aragonés, Eddie Campbell, Nick Carty, Paul Chadwick, Evan Dorkin, Michael Gilbert, Sam Gladsman, Jeffrey Jones, Jack Kirby, Joe Kubert, Alan Kupperberg, Gray Morrow, John Severin, Scott Shaw, Walt Simonson, Don Simpson, Joe Sinnott, Art Spiegelman, Roy Thomas, Alex Toth, Herb Trimpe, Rick Veitch, Alan Weiss, and Barry Windsor Smith, and John Workman. All of these were 70% off on the Tomorrow's webpage, and I jumped on them. So, you know me, I'm a bottom feeder. And then the other thing is, I did a lot of shifts at the group home, and I've had trouble sleeping there the past week or so. So I was reading comics on my tablet, and I'm reading the Journey into Mystery Loki series. Because if you remember, around about the time that Fear Itself started, Journey into Mystery became a series about Loki. And it's the child Loki. and I had never read those books because there was just so much coming out at the time, and I've heard how good they are. I'm about 12 issues in, and it is phenomenal. If you've got Marvel Unlimited, just look up Journey into Mystery. It's the last, I think it starts with like 623, something like that. Beautiful, beautiful art. The story by Karen Gillan is really good. Highly recommended. Good stuff. And I have the weekend, the 2 days before this podcast drops, I am not working at all. I have let the group home know that I am taking the weekend off. I will be sleeping in late. I will be waking up late. I will be staying up late. I don't know what I'm going to be doing other than not working. So I will be enjoying that.
Cool. Let's go.
Believe it or not,
let's go geeking.
Sunday we could go geeking.
Cool. You know, I've mentioned Star Reach Classics, just a quick one before we end it. That was an Eclipse 6-issue series that reprinted a lot of the fun stuff from Star Reach. And I'm just looking at the Origin of God by Jim Starlin from 1974.
Yeah, that was just a fun one.
I think this is going on my pile of to be read tonight. So cool.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Ooh, I feel the urge. It's there. It's deep inside me. I gotta... Oh, never mind. Hit my music. Buck is on a roll.